Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
I saw an article earlier this week that talks about the number of people that have been killed based on the cuts to USAID when Donald Trump became president earlier this year. Now, there is a lot that goes into this and to what USAID was, a lot of questions about what those funds were used for, potential corruption involved in those funds, and even the idea that there's a possibility that the use of those funds, that giving aid to certain countries might have sort of throttled their ability to progress. There was an article in The Guardian about this. I'm not going into that stuff today. What is more interesting to me about this is the interplay of politics, the reaction to collapse and how politicians respond, and how that can exacerbate collapse. This is a perfect example of catabolic collapse. And so we'll dive a little bit into this and explore why. So this article from the New Yorker states, "The shutdown of USAID has already killed hundreds of thousands. The short documentary Rovina's Choice tells the story of what goes on when aid goes." This article highlights especially USAID's humanitarian aid to help combat HIV, tuberculosis, and polio, and reducing maternal and child deaths worldwide. Talks about how on a budget of just $24 per American, out of the $15,000 in taxes paid per person last year, they had saved lives at an almost unimaginable scale. It claims that over 2 decades, it saved 92 million lives. That was an estimate that came from The Lancet. It was an independent, peer-reviewed analysis. It goes on to talk about how someone named Brooke Nichols, the Boston University epidemiologist and mathematical modeler, has maintained a respected tracker of current impact. The model is conservative, assuming, for example, that the State Department will fully sustain the programs that remain. As of November 5th, 2025, it is estimated that USAID's dismantling has already caused the deaths of 600,000 people, two-thirds of them being children. It says the administration, for its part, has denied causing widespread harm, even as it has made the scale of the damage harder to measure, halting data monitoring and dismissing the inspectors general who might have documented it. This is common in cases of public man-made death. During Mao Zedong's disastrous Great Leap Forward from 1958 to 1961, the Chinese government released no accurate mortality data. Observers abroad understood that a hunger crisis was underway when China began importing grain, but the scale of the catastrophe was not known until the mid-1980s, when the first reliable census allowed historians to calculate that between 23 and 30 million people had died. A fuller account of the fallout from USAID shutdown will probably have to await analysis of the United Nations 2025 mortality statistics, which likely won't appear until 2027. They're saying to get a real accurate analysis of the global impact, we're going to have to wait another year, at least. But there are other ways to glimpse the scale of the harm. With a documentary team that includes both American and local journalists, I have been following what has happened in Kenyan communities where USAID had been active, in an advanced HIV ward in Nairobi, in primary health care centers that had sharply reduced malaria, in a refugee camp, and elsewhere. So anyway, this documentary goes on to talk about their experience and what they witnessed there. But what does this have to do specifically with collapse and catabolic collapse? Another article posted this week, this was a more of a blog post in the collapseofindustrialcivilization.com. It was titled, "The Strongman's Folly, How Authoritarian Ambition Accelerates Civilizational Collapse." The author summarized it by saying, "At its heart, this essay argues that what we're watching in American politics, corruption, spectacle, rising force, and the gutting of public institutions, isn't just politics as usual or the fault of one person. It's the late stage symptoms of a whole civilization in trouble. As energy and resources dwindle and leaders double down on division and denial, the old systems that held society together start falling apart. The essay makes clear these authoritarian moves are desperate responses to deeper breakdowns, and unless something changes, they're pulling the rug out from under the future of modern life itself. And this whole idea plays into catabolic collapse, right? We have built a society, we've spent centuries building an industrial civilization, which requires growth to survive, and which growth uses an extraordinary and increasing amount of resources. The growth that we've experienced as a society over the last 250 years or so has required an extraordinary change in complexity, and that complexity requires increased inputs, increased costs. It's not just raw resources like natural resources from the earth, but it's an increasingly complex cog, a machine of interwoven systems that all rely on each other to continue functioning. And all of those systems have costs. For the last several decades, humanity has started to have to grapple with the decrease in availability of those resources, with a steeper struggle to locate them, to extract them, to convert them into the final products that make society move. And I have this long-standing belief that politics is simply the response to that struggle. In the cases in which we vote in our politicians, what is it that people want? They are voting in what they want to see, and we're seeing more and more that what they are voting in is populist politicians. Politicians who find a way to blame the lack of resources on minorities or on political opposition, who seek power by making promises, saying that they are the only ones that can fix this, me and me alone, and I will do it by destroying these minorities, which are the problem. But along with those populist promises also come cuts. The key mechanism of catabolic collapse that makes it what it is the fact that in order to save some parts of the system, we sacrifice others. That is what DOGE at least pretended to be at the beginning of the Donald Trump administration, where Elon Musk came in with his stooges of 20-year-old mathematicians. Now, I say pretend because, you know, it was acted like they were going to cut all this money out in order to save billions or trillions of dollars in taxes and to begin to pay back the national debt, which has reached $38 trillion in the U.S. There has so far been no indication of any sort of relevant or noteworthy savings from the attempt, especially when the president then promises $20 billion or $40 billion to foreign countries like Argentina, or billions upon billions of dollars to Israel, and in Joe Biden's case, billions of dollars to Ukraine. When military spending increases by billions of dollars, when there are billion-dollar-plus contracts with surveillance contractors, etc., etc., spending is not going to decrease. It's a facade. But nonetheless, those cuts that happen have cascading effects. One of the things that I fear the absolute most about the future, and that I think are going to become some of the absolute worst catastrophes humanity will face, is mass migration. As the U.S. cuts aid to some of the poorest parts of the world, the parts that need it most, deaths will increase. That in and of itself will not necessarily cause mass migration on its own, but it does continue to increase the desolation and the desperation of those nations and the hundreds of millions of people that live in them. One argument that I mentioned earlier was that the U.S. or other first world countries or Western world countries supplying aid to impoverished nations keeps them impoverished. It requires a quid pro quo. It gives Western nations access into those countries for their resources or for that advantageous location for war footings and those types of things. And that if the aid would stop, perhaps those nations would be able to find themselves in a state of necessity that might allow them to forge their own path forward and develop and find their ways out, where they may be relying on a crutch. Now, I do not know enough about the economics of these situations to give that any credence. What I can say, though, is if the U.S. is providing aid in a way that allows an impoverished nation to stay where they are, but to have access to water and food and supplies needed, if that is removed, for many that incentive to stay may disappear. To survive, a nation or a people may be forced to leave. As drought and famine as floods, as sea level rise, as other climate change related issues, combined with geopolitical tensions, civil wars, invasions, pandemics, continuing health concerns, economic issues, etc., will be enough in many cases, in many nations, to force people to flee. So while I can't speak to whether or not U.S. involvement in other nations, whether from a humanitarian standpoint or in other ways, is a good or bad thing, it will change with that being removed. Whether or not the U.S. should have been there in the first place, whether or not that aid was helping or not, removing it is going to destabilize places. It's going to cause shifts. And this is just another way in which, again, catabolic collapse, in which we eat away at the resources that are going to a certain place in a certain way, will cause changes in that place. And those changes will more than likely be negative. This has been an example of how catabolic collapse from the United States is affecting countries outside of the U.S. Increased isolationism, tariffs, threats of war with multiple nations, throwing other nations under the bus, strengthening ties with authoritarian states around the world, and weakening ties with allies, weakening NATO, weakening trade agreements, removing ourselves from the Paris Climate Accord, etc., is a form of catabolic collapse in which the U.S. removes itself from those international relationships. And that changes the world order. It changes how power works. And then the U.S. continues to make cuts internally. It eats itself alive. As the government shuts down and things like SNAP benefits are under threat, as government employees are furloughed or laid off, as DOGE cuts hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of government jobs, as libraries shut down, as funding dries up, as research stops, as data is no longer collected, when funding is cut to individual states because they didn't vote the way that Donald Trump wanted, these things are not immediately apparent, not all of them. They don't all cause an immediate and epic collapse or catastrophe. But little by little, we go chipping away at the foundation of the infrastructure and resources that make this country and that in part make the world turn, and we turn it on its head. We've talked about how the economy right now is staying alive, it's surviving based on simply the hopeful one day returns that we may get from AI investment. While we chip away at the infrastructure of the United States and what keeps the economy moving, if that bubble bursts, the underlying foundation that was keeping the economy alive prior to that will have eroded away to such an extent that, I mean, it could be an economic downfall that we don't recover from for decades, if ever. And what's scary is that the United States isn't the only country that's headed in this direction. As a matter of fact, many countries are heading further and further away from democracy and towards authoritarianism. There is a potential cascade in the decades to come in regards to people to have any say in what their nation does, and in individuals being the ones to make all of the decisions, more so than that already happens. At this point, corporatism, corporate lobbying, oligarchies, nepotism, all of these things are basically consolidating power as is. It's been a sort of long behind-the-scenes consolidation of that power away from the people and to the wealthy. But we're entering an era where that's happening less behind closed doors and happening more out in the open. I think that we are in for a very bumpy next few decades. And it starts now. It starts with the decisions being made in this moment, in this administration. It starts with the knock-on effects that we see around the world, with the 600,000 or so extra deaths that happened this year due to USAID shutting down. It manifests itself in the weakening economy, in the job losses, in the inflation rates, in the increase of impoverished individuals, and the increase in the wealth of the top 0.1 or 0.01%. 600,000 people died this year because USAID went away. But Elon Musk just received a $1 trillion payout package from his companies. 42 million people are not receiving SNAP benefits in the United States, at least at the time of this recording. But Donald Trump is building a $300 ballroom and holding massive parties there, costing more than I'll make in a lifetime. When politicians react in this way, people typically react in another. And it will be interesting to watch the world react and U.S. citizens react and see what they are able to conjure, what they're able to come up with. Another post this week made about how propagandized the U.S. people are. We're brainwashed into believing that the grind is what's important and keeping up with the Joneses and advancing in a corporation to make more and more money every year, to keep our heads down and not ask questions, and to be afraid, to just trust those in authority and to be afraid to speak out against them. And they're ratcheting up that fear. And the next big question is, how do we as a people react to that? And I think that's a question that we haven't quite seen answered yet. So far, it's in relative silence. So far, it's in acquiescing, deer in the headlights, watching it unfold with no real response. And it may require conditions to get much worse before that response comes about. But by then, will power be consolidated enough to shut down any potential response that comes? To be seen. Thanks for being here. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.